Home. They say it's where the heart is. They also say it's wherever you make it. They don't say. It's where you unload your stuff, get tired halfway through unpacking, use some boxes as furniture, realize your oven mitt's in a box that doubles as a nightstand, don't want to buy a new nightstand, and use a towel as an oven mitt instead. But no matter where you call home, GEICO makes it easy to bundle and save on renters and car insurance. Easier than grabbing a piping hot pan with a towel that's a bit too thin and trying to quickly get it to the counter. Ooh, hot, 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 hot.
This episode is brought to you by Verizon. Get a Verizon Business Unlimited plan from the network businesses rely on. Hey, Monica, with 5G Ultra Wideband in many more cities, you get up to 10 times the speed at no extra cost.
Hello, downloads in no time.
Plus, unlimited premium data and hotspot data to keep the signal flowing and your teams going. Come in or book an appointment with a Verizon business expert to find the right plan for your team. 5G Ultra Wideband available in over 1,700 cities with Business Unlimited Pro 2.0 smartphone plan. Speed comparison is to median Verizon 4G LTE speeds. Download speeds may vary depending upon network and coverage conditions and content optimization for 5G Ultra Wideband.
All right. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to the Benzinga Cannabis Hour. I am one of your hosts, Patrick Lane, and joining me, drawing the short straw and having the co-host with me today is none other than Javier
Haas. Here.
Welcome, brother. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
How you doing?
I'm great. I'm great. I had a vacation. I've been off for a couple of weeks, but I'm back. I feel recharged. I feel ready to go. I feel ready to solve some problems, pass legalization myself. I don't care. Let's roll, man. Let's do this.
No, man, you look great. I remember I saw you on camera the day you were back from vacation, and I defined you as silky. You were just
silky. Yeah, well, that could have been the leftover edibles, so that could also have been that. But I appreciate
it. It felt like
that.
If some wind caught you, it would just fly away, you know, like.
Thank you. I do feel as though I'm flying high right now. I feel like we are in a good spot right now, leading into the last quarter of the year almost. God, can you believe third quarter is almost over?
It's been a crazy year, but we're riding high on life, high on success, and high on gratitude of being safe.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, yeah, man. What about you? How are you?
I am doing great. I am honestly doing great. Excited about a show today, about a show next week on ETFs.
That's going to be fun.
Let's get it rolling. Who do we have today?
The first guest is Mark Passerini. And as we are moving him over, Mark is the CEO of Mission Cannabis. I will let him explain his trajectory here. There he is. Wow.
Look at that.
Hey, guys.
Look at that background. You are the coolest person we've had on here yet.
This is my basement, also known as my home office, also known as my insane asylum.
We all need one of those. We all need one of those, man. That is cool. So what do you have on the walls? Is this memorabilia? What is this?
It is. It's a little bit of a kind of a cannabis museum in some sense. I've got memorabilia from the past decade plus of the cannabis world. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Can you show us something, like your favorite item?
Oh boy. There really is no favorite item, but let's see. I would say, well, this is kind of cool. I just found this the other day. This is so 5 or 6 years ago, we had the best capsule game in the nation. We had 25 capsules available with basically every, like so many different formulations. We had a 3-2-1, which was 60 milligrams of THC, 40 milligrams of CBD, and 20 milligrams of CBN. Great for sleep.
That sounds great.
25 different formulations in here. pretty, well, pretty
you said that was from 10 years ago?
No, this is actually from 5 or 6 years ago. And I feel like this is still, I still have yet to walk into a dispensary that has more than 2 or 3 capsules these days. I feel like this is...
I don't see them often. I really don't.
No, for some
reason. Why is that?
It's a good question. Personally, I would rather have a capsule than, intake a bunch of sugar and Rice Krispie treats and brownies and all that kind of stuff. If I'm gonna have a treat, I'll go to the bakery or the the snack food aisle instead of. But yeah, so I'm not sure. I think someday it'll come back around.
Very cool. Okay. No, so Mark, tell us a little bit, because you have an interesting trajectory. The Ohm of medicine into Mission Cannabis and its relationship with Forefront. And I'd love the audience to just hear about you and how you got into all this.
Sure. So you mentioned Ohm of Medicine. That was a dispensary that my partner and I founded back in 2010, which makes us the longest, I believe we're the longest continually operating cannabis retailer this side of the Mississippi. We opened back then with the intent really to focus on 3 things. We wanted to focus on the patient experience, the medical research, and community engagement. Also, of course, an overarching goal of dismantling the war on drugs. And we did that by engaging politically. So the Ohm of Medicine has a distinction of being the only cannabis dispensary in the country that's partnered with a major university, the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, on an IRB-approved study, which was eventually published in the Journal of Pain in 2016. That study found a 64% decrease in opioid use amongst the hundreds of patient participants.
Wow.
Fast forward to 2018, we got licensed finally. We were operating in a somewhat of a legal gray area for a long time, much like the California market was for decades. And we were acquired by Forefront. So currently I am the executive vice president of Mission Dispensaries, which is the retail arm of Forefront Ventures. Forefront started in 2011 as a consulting company, which helped clients win over 65 licenses around the country before we pivoted to operating the facilities ourselves. So we currently operate 8 dispensaries in 4 states under the Mission name.
Very cool. And so what's the significance of the Ohm of Medicine? What should we know about that?
Yeah, so my partner and I wanted to really create a space that was welcoming, that was unique. We really wanted to focus more on Eastern medicine as opposed to Western medicine. So we figured Ohm of Medicine kind of encapsulated all of that. My partner actually has an Ohm symbol tattooed on his back. So it was... It made for a good fit. Plus, there's a ton of wordplay we can use with Ohm. We say that there's no place like Ohm. Ohm is where the art is. There's a million of them. I'm not gonna bore you.
I like it. So wait, you didn't opt for the tattoo? You didn't dive in head first? Got it.
Not yet.
Maybe it's the Forefront tattoo that you'll get then.
Right.
There we go.
And there's a relationship also with Mission. I see like there's something kind of holistic in both words, like, you know, like Ohm is you know, tied to the Hindu religion, and Mission, it makes us very much think of someone, you know, an evangelist, and in this case, you were the evangelist, I feel, at least in Michigan, from what I know of the many virtues of cannabis and you know, what you bring up about the opioid study. Again, it's something that nowadays is in everyone's mouths and everyone quotes as, you know, their big argument, but you were doing it early. Like, how did you even come to do that? How did you get UM to agree to collaborate on researching weed? You know, we can call it cannabis, but in 2016, it was pretty controversial.
Yeah, no doubt. We actually started the study back in 2014. And just to go back to Ohm and Mission, I won't bore you by reciting my entire rap, but I've written a rap song called The Ohm Mission.
How the hell did I end up on this show with 2 rappers?
Wait a second, Javier, you rap?
I do. I also wrote a rap about cannabis and ended up recording with Wu-Tang Clan and Twista. a story for some other time.
There's no way we don't get the two of you up here on a podcast rapping at some point. No way we don't make that happen.
Only if you beatbox, Patrick.
Don't tempt me, but also nobody wants to hear that. So wait, listen, I'm super interested. I think retail is one of the hottest sectors right now in terms of what I'm hearing from, especially from investor interest, right? What's your take? I'm always interested in this one question. And you being an operator in Michigan and then signing on with a company like 4Front with multi-state operations, right? Mm-hmm. What do you think the major differentiator is between companies who choose the sort of multi-state operation versus companies like a Trulieve who do one state, focus on one market? And I know that some of this is hypothetical, right? But when it comes to how you choose to grow your dispensaries and how 4Front's choosing to grow their dispensaries, why one versus the other, I guess, is the question.
Why an MSO versus a SSO, a single state operator,
you're asking? Ooh, has anybody coined that, SSO?
Yeah, SSO, I was.
Is that a thing? I like that.
You know, I heard something similar. It wasn't SSO. I forget what it was, a single state operator? I forget, but sure, I may have just coined it. I don't know.
I like that. Let's remember that. But yeah, that would be it. So I mean, you were in a single state, right? And you chose to jump into a big company with multi-state operations. Any reason why you might have chosen to go that route?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think the biggest reason is our values aligned with missions and 4Fronts, and 4Front really was born, like I mentioned, out of a consulting group. And their consulting group helped about 65 applicants around the country to win licenses. And they really were, in 2011, 2012, the leading consultant. And when it comes to understanding different markets, I think that's obviously played a huge leg up for us in choosing who we would be partnering with. And, you know, 4Front and Mission have definitely over the years been successful in a variety of different states. Because as you guys know, and I'm sure everybody on this call or podcast or whatever you call it, it's difficult to navigate all the different states. I mean, the regulations are vastly different from state to state. And, for us, it was a neat, easy decision. We knew a few people at 4Front, Chris Crane being one of them. And it was, it just made sense to us. And, you know, obviously the more states that come on board, the more we can spread this out, the quicker the industry thrives as a whole.
Very cool. Thank you, man. Thank you.
Are you looking at any specific states next? Is it something you can disclose? I understand, of course, there's public company disclosure, you know, limitations, but let's talk, you know, generally, which states do you think are interesting?
Sure. Yeah. Well, there's every state is interesting for their own reasons. But I would say that, you know, we're definitely looking at growing in the states that we're currently in. That's number one. So in the short term, we're looking at adding a second retail store in Chicago. And that is on track for the very end of this year. We're looking at adding a facility in Massachusetts in Brookline. We're also on the other side of the business, on the cultivation and processing side, we're looking at opening a facility in California. California is definitely very, you know, appealing.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, California is one of those markets where, you know, we've almost become too used to what's going on in that market. And, you know, they were one of the first movers. And yet, you know, we almost don't hear a whole lot except from the giant brands and those folks who are well entrenched in that market. So I suppose one of the things that really interests me right now is obviously, you know, in the midst of a global pandemic, in the midst of things changing rapidly day in and day out for retailers, you know, what has it been like for you guys in some of these different markets that you're in, you know, curbside delivery? How has that affected your strategies? Have you seen certain products moving to the top of the basket list for some of these clients? What does that look like?
So yeah, I mean, COVID obviously has affected our operations. I mean, I think it's affected all, you know, almost 8 billion of our lives around the globe. But our stores in particular have, you know, we've definitely seen a significant increase in sales, going from an illegal act to an essential service in a matter of 6 months has really opened the eyes of many new consumers as to the safety of the plant, I think. And, you know, let's not forget that what we're discussing here is objectively one of the most non-toxic substances known to man. So over the past few months, I think more and more folks are starting to be a little bit more comfortable with really delving into the cannabis world, trying new things for the first time. When it comes to products, I think vapes and edibles are becoming a lot more popular. It's a very easy way to consume, and for people that are brand new to cannabis, it's a easier way to figure out what your dosage is, understand how to appropriately work with not only the methodology, but you know what you're trying to address. One thing that you know we definitely have not lost sight of at Mission and Forefront is the fact that you know this was born out of a movement. This industry was born out of the medical movement, and we don't want to lose sight of the fact that this is the medical efficacy of this plant is real. And I think more and more people are starting to realize that this is this could be an alternative to a number of things, not just opioids like we mentioned earlier, but down to things like Ambien if you have trouble sleeping. So I think baskets have definitely changed a little bit. Less flour. I mean, over the past 10 years, we've seen that same trend. When we opened, we were probably selling 95% flour, whereas today that's probably cut in almost half.
Wow.
And has that product distribution changed even more during COVID? As you said, edibles and vape pens. But here's what I'm thinking. Today we published an article, it's an analysis on the Colorado market and how it has changed in recent months. And one of the largest trends we've seen from analyzing purchases is a migration from adult use to medical. You know, a lot of people are going back to the medical use because of the pricing benefits, because of the variety of products, you know, and before it was like, yeah, getting a card is a bit of a hassle, you know, to save a couple hundred bucks a month. Nowadays, a couple hundred bucks a month are a big difference. But, you know, maybe you don't have such a clear distinction when it comes to retail there. So my question is, have you seen a change in products?
Yeah, I mean, you mean from pre-COVID to COVID, a change in products?
Yeah, I mean, throughout COVID, have you seen a migration of many users who self-identified as adult users toward a more medical use? Is it something you can measure?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it's definitely something we can measure. We at all of our stores really encourage all of our customers to really research the medical benefits and figure out a way for them to get their cards. Because like you said, it's not just the amount of products that they have available to them, but it's oftentimes a lot cheaper. At least in Michigan, it's 10% cheaper because there's a 10% tax on the adult use market. But when it comes to the products, I think on the adult use side, for COVID, more people are going towards edibles, especially because, you know, COVID is, ideally, you don't want to be smoking. You don't want anything that you're inhaling. But it's I would say capsules, believe it or not, capsules have actually had a little bit of an uptick.
They feel like traditional medication, right? Like right. It's easier for me to go to my 72-year-old mother and say, you know, you're not feeling great. Here's a capsule. It looks exactly like ibuprofen. Let's not mention a brand. You know, but it looks exactly like what we're used to, right? To seeing in a pharmacy. So it does not surprise me.
Yeah, we're actually seeing that with our Verdure line of capsules. We have different formulations for, you know, THC, CBD, a combination of both. And the more people I think learn about the benefits of, you know, really titrating their dosage, it makes it a lot easier. But on top of that, you know, with COVID, obviously curbside and delivery were game changers. Pre-COVID, delivery was so taboo, at least in the state of Michigan and probably most states. But now it's the norm. And it reminds me, you know, 10 years ago when people walked into our facility, how their eyes would light up and you'd see this joy in people that they could not believe that they were actually in a facility that would legally, well, sort of legally, it was again a gray area, sell them cannabis. Whereas now you walk up to somebody's door and it's that same elation that people just can't believe that, you know, they're actually able to go onto a pocket computer and place an order for all these different products. And then 30, 40 minutes later, freaky fast, it shows up at their door.
It's like Publisher's Clearinghouse, man. You're there with the cannabis instead of the giant check and balloons and Ed McMahon. So we'll right. take it. Well, listen, in the last minute or so that we have, is there anything that you want to tell us, anything that you're excited about moving forward with Mission and Forefront? And if not, give us your prediction on legalization. I think it's a great way to end. I think the election's coming up. I always like to ask that question.
Yeah, well, there's a number of different things I would say that, you know, one of the things, and we touched on it earlier, many adult use retailers, I think these days, have really somewhat not ignored, but put aside the medical benefits since they've transitioned. And one of the most important things to remember is this: even though many states are making that pivot to serving adult use customers, we really need to keep a focus on the plant's medicinal benefits. Imagine how much it would benefit the recreational market by focusing on wellness and not just what the consumers are purchasing, but why they're purchasing them. I really truly believe that that'll help accelerate the whole process of acceptance, which would help the industry, the consumer, its investors, tax revenue, and the planet as a whole. You know, when it comes to one of the things that we've seen in Michigan's marketplace is we've seen a lot of support at the highest levels. The governor, the attorney general, our state representatives and senators, even one of our congresspeople have come out in support of legalization and spoken at the annual hash bash on Ann Arbor's University of Michigan campus. So I truly think that, you know, with keeping the focus on political outreach, on medical research, that would be a game changer. And what we hope to do as a company, you know, one thing that we've always we've really strived for is to be leaders in the movement and really try to inspire our customer base to do the same. You know, when it comes to really changing laws and changing policies, it's not easy, obviously, you know, but the policymakers and legislators work for us. And we as advocates and operators, industry people, we're the experts. So we can't leave policy in the hands of the uninformed. You know, I'm the vice chair of the Michigan Cannabis Industry Association. Our president at Mission, Chris Crane, is the vice chair of the NCIA, and he sits on the policy council. And as many out there know, the MORE Act, which would decriminalize cannabis federally, is scheduled to be voted on the House floor this month. So, you know, just imagine if 1% of our customer base called their congresspeople to demand that they vote yes. I think that, you know, federal progress doesn't come easy, obviously, but with a laser focus on mobilizing the community, we can definitely make it happen.
Love that.
Since you mentioned reaching out to politicians and Governor Whitmer, if any of you are in Michigan, we strongly suggest you reach out to Governor Whitmer and ask that they pardon Michael Thompson. If you don't know about his story, he's a long-serving nonviolent cannabis offender, and he contracted COVID in prison during, you know, the last month. So if any of you have doubts on how to reach out and how to help, please email us cannabisnews@benzinga.com, and we'll make sure to guide you and connect you with the Last Prisoner Project. I'm sorry you plugged that, but you know, it just,
no, well said. Well said. Absolutely, absolutely necessary. Well, listen, Mark, thanks for your time today, man. We really appreciate it. We're excited to see where Mission and Forefront go next. And we'll be looking for you.
Sounds good, guys.
All right. Take care. I'm coming over for some memorabilia. All right. Take care. All right. Very cool. I feel like I need more glow lights. I feel like I need some more cool lighting in here. And you know, it's just a little bland. I have my Peyton Manning picture up on the wall, and that's about it.
We need to get you a background and then a virtual background. Those are not great.
No, naturally. No. So lame. Well, listen, yeah,
we'll get you a vertical cannabis grow for both of your doors.
Oh, I will actually take that. That would go to actually very good use in my home. So that would be great. Next up, Mr. Michael Gruber, one of the managing partners at Salvio Capital. And as we move him over, Salvio is one of those companies we've heard about for a long time. I'm excited to get Michael in here. Tell us about the landscape. Tell us about what's going on in Illinois and other markets. But yeah, Michael, are you with us?
I am. Here I am.
How's it going, man?
Pretty good.
How is life? Where are you today?
I'm in Chicago, just north of Chicago.
Very cool. Very cool.
I don't have all that great memorabilia as Mark had, but hey, I'm in a house of six people running around trying to find the right space to stream at the same time. So I had to pick a place after running back to the house. So thank
God bless you. Six people, kids, family?
Four kids, yeah. Four kids.
Oh, wow. Wow. And are they in school? Are they doing the virtual schooling?
Two are in school in person and two are virtual. So, yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, God bless you, man. I don't know how the hell you guys are doing it. Our kids are young enough, four years old and 10 months old, that we're not quite in the thick of that yet. But good luck, man.
All right. Thank you.
So listen, you guys are some of the OGs in the space. Let's give the audience just a little flavor of your trajectory here. Yeah. How you jumped in, what Salvio is, and what you guys have been doing.
I like the criteria that you use. One of the words that Salvio always uses, they say extraordinary. That's what we look for. That's what we aim for. Extraordinary.
I didn't even realize that. I'll have to take an extra look. thanks for reading between all the lines and really digging in. Just to give you a quick background, I've been active in the space for, seven plus years. First got, very active in helping some folks launch some of the original licenses within Illinois itself. So it's good, following on in the conversation with Mark and Forefront. I'm, good friends with the Forefront folks and like them. But, it's through that initial effort that I first got involved and worked with a lot of companies of helping position them and raising capital and work with families trying to find places to invest and advise them on merging assets. And then, really got deep and started investing in companies. And then, Salvio Capital was formed with the idea that the industry was nascent and pretty confusing. And there were, folks were still trying to move from the black market to the gray market to the regulated market. And it was very unclear who were the right people who were doing things right. And it was complicated. And for the average person, one, to have access to the opportunities was hard enough, but then two, being able to appropriately analyze them, and then structure, negotiate, and then manage the portfolio became even greater. And in cocktail conversation, everybody loved loved cannabis, liked talking about it, but folks were a little bit slower on the checkbook side. So we wanted to really introduce what we thought was one of the first ways to introduce professional institutional-like quality investing to the space. So I had been involved in investing and advising companies since 2013. We launched Salvio at the end of 2016, right after the election, after my partner and I spent a good portion of 2016 really honing in the strategy and building up the relationships with companies where we found enough that we really wanted to do. And the reality is when you look back to that period of time, there weren't that many companies. It was unclear who would be the winners. And we were really focused on capital efficient businesses, as well as ones that would be less affected by the uncertain regulatory environment, especially when Trump was elected. We had AG Jeff Sessions, who was no fan of the industry. So our initial focus was a lot around the ancillary brick, picks and shovels portion, of which we made a number of investments there. But then, our intention always was to be very active across the entire ecosystem. So, our portfolio spans from cultivation, manufacturing, retail, brands, then all the technology in between, lab testing, distribution and logistics. formulations and focused on, you know, pharmaceuticals, as well as technology itself. So we have a pretty diversified view of the industry, and that's one of our key goals when we work with companies, is to build out this leverageable portfolio so that we can have some of these companies interact and where we could really help each of them out, whether it's a brand we're pushing through retail or it's manufacturing capabilities that can help our cultivation or anything else.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, you guys have been some of the OGs, you know, and I feel like every time we hear about a company, it's like, oh yeah, this is how they're connected to Salvio or some of these other funds out there. So it's really cool to see that in action, right? So I guess one of the biggest things that I wanted to talk about with you today is, I mean, obviously everyone knows that there's a capital crunch. There has been for a little while now, you know? So when it comes to where you guys sit, and knowing your breadth of knowledge and experience in the industry, what are the opportunities that still exist right now for companies that are raising, for companies that need capital to grow? Maybe what sectors are most interesting to you in that vein when it comes to opportunities out there? But maybe give us both sides of that coin.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess one thing I, you know, like to say is, you know, a lot has changed between, you know, 2016 and 2020. And you know, what I would say is, if you look back in tail end of 2018 into, you know, the second half of 2019, it was very much a seller's market. You know, the power was in the hands of these entrepreneurs and operators. You know, for us as an investor, it feels good to finally be, you know, in a little bit of a more powerful seat, in the sense that it is a very shallow, constrained capital market, and it continues to get more and more difficult, I think, for a lot of companies to sort of raise capital. And so I think now is a wonderful opportunity to find companies where you could truly find good value. And what I think was also different in the past, in the early days, there was a lot of sort of innovation happening in terms of the first types of companies providing a distribution service or a POS or anything else. Now, depending on where you are, there's lots of companies that are doing each of those things. So as an investor, what I look at, and I look at the types of investing we'll do now versus before, you really aren't getting paid for risk, right? And it makes less sense to do a lot of the innovation, and why do a startup when you now have all this history and you understand things? Why not go with a more established company who's built out their manufacturing processes? It has their distribution in place. It has their executive team, and it's really about proving things out. You know, they still may have issues on the balance sheet side or the need for capital, but it's the opportunity now to invest in a lot of these companies which have a more clear way about how to improve that company. So I think overall, from a big picture macro point of view, that's one of, I think, how we see it and a number of our other fellow investors, you know, how most of us think about it. You know, a lot of us, as you understand, you know, are co-investors in a good number of these companies. There's very few companies that where there's a sole investor. That doesn't happen. And the reality is, for a lot of those companies that maybe went that route, you know, they're also feeling the pain, and that one investor may not have that capability to refund it now. And now they have to go out to fresh capital. So it always does help to diversify sort of the investor base that you have. So I'll stop it there. I'm not sure if you have any questions, but then I could go into specific areas and sectors.
So something that I was thinking while you were speaking, you know, just maybe you can humor me. So if you could think of one very successful early investment, say, you know, 2016, you made something that was very exciting. And, you know, you said, good that we bet on this. And then one thing or one idea that you got excited about, and we can leave the company name out of it, but that you say, like, glad we did not invest in this. This was, you know, I was completely off with what I expected to see in the market.
Well, I think, you know, one great example, because it, you know, worked out, you know, very well for ourselves as well. You know, we were, you know, very early in the game, we were believers in the power, hopefully, of brands. And we were early in the sense of sort of seeing how the Canadian market was evolving. And there was a euphoria in Canada to sort of build things. So, you know, we were a very, you know, an early investor in a company, Tokyo Smoke, which was really trying to kill, you know, create a
brand. Just like, yeah, one of these companies, you know, and, I don't know if you've heard about it.
Yeah, and which, you know, which at that time, it was all about a vision and a story about them being able to take, and they had paraphernalia in their coffee shops. But the idea was in the future to have kiosks and be ordered cannabis and then to have stores. But they were able to sell themselves twice, you know, one to Doja and then one to Canopy Growth. And, you know, at a nice, you know, value, you know, and, you know, now along with Tweed, there are Tokyo Smoke stores, but luckily that sort of worked out in terms of the vision and the story and the euphoria within Canada. You know, at this point in time, it'll be a lot more difficult to just have this brand story without much behind it of actually selling, you know, cannabis. That wouldn't happen, you know, here in the US. You know, so that, you know, that's sort of the story early on and how things have sort of, you know, changed. You know, nowadays, you know, just in terms of, you know, how we got more and more sensitive as time went on, I think, you know, we were really interested about how folks were going to consume and the delivery methods. And I think we were, you know, big believers in showing the ubiquity that, example, PAX was starting to have. But we continued to see sort of the valuations continue to go up incredibly high. And so, yeah, so a few times when they were raising capital, and even though, you know, we love the product and we believe sort of in the growth, you know, we were concerned about alternative, you know, delivering consumption methods, but, you know, whether or not they were going to be able to hold on to that. So in that instance, I think I'm happy at that point in time that we did not, you know, invest, just given it was such a changing world in terms of, one, the preferences for the types of products one people would use, as well as really there's so many different ways to consume now that I think these sort of closed-end devices, I think there's lots of closed-end devices, as well as there's open architecture devices too. And so I think it winds up being difficult, and I think there's a market for each of them, but at a certain point you got to see what's the value or how much value there should be. And I think like a lot of companies, they probably got way ahead of themselves from a valuation standpoint.
Yeah. That's super interesting. And I love it that, you know, that's one thing I like about cannabis is we look back and reassess and acknowledge, you know, what we got right, what we got wrong. 2 years ago, everyone was saying, you know, the way to go are, you know, Canadian LPs, right? Like licensed producers in Canada, they're the best stocks. American stocks had nothing to offer. Now everyone is saying, like, oh, we were wrong. Actually, MSOs are the thing. I want to see what happens in 5 years.
Yeah, that's one thing that we've continually done. I think we've always been open. You know, we've always had three main focuses. One was, you know, diversification across sort of geography, diversification across stage, and we were pretty open to sort of structure of our investments. And we've always been playing into that and sort of seeing where we could fill the gaps or where we weren't. But at the same time, every point in time, we sort of reevaluated what kinds of companies should be reprioritized. And I would say at certain points in times, there was a lot of focus on, say, brands, or we said, yes, MSOs, or we said, we need to look at different areas. And I think you do need to sort of, not reinvent yourself, but reinvent your sort of priorities and focus, because it does change tremendously. You know, I think just like now, I think there's an interesting period of time because there's really a changing of guard of licenses, as well as, you know, the private MSOs themselves, because a lot of them got ahead of themselves in terms of grabbing up assets, but then they didn't have enough money to sort of build out. And so now you could peel off some of those licenses in certain states, and that gives opportunities to the larger, strong MSOs to pick and choose those licenses, yeah. Or whether it be me or others to sort of recreate the new private MSO or SSO, which makes more sense.
There it is, the SSO.
No, but yeah, just I heard your comment before. SSO has been around for a while, so it wasn't sort of just invented now.
It's
something that's going around for a while. Yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, what one thing I want to circle back to, you mentioned recreating a private MSO or SSO, right? And you know, going back to the drawing board, but with all the experience that you have, right. And you mentioned choosing as an investor to use that experience to focus more on established companies with the things that are going right that you've seen that maybe didn't go right before, right? In some of the seed rounds that you were involved with. So for those companies starting out now, right? Those companies coming to the table and innovating and they're looking for a seed round or what have you. What do you say to those guys? What advice do you give them? Even if they're not right for you, who should they go after? What should they be doing? How can we help them in their infancy?
But number one, what is the, you know, a rule for any, you know, industry, but one, number one is you gotta be a realistic one with, you know, expectations, and two, setting values that make sense or and sort of grounded in sort of reality. You know, I was involved in, you know, being asked to help out with companies or looking at companies where you just sort of see expectations and valuations of things, which just are ridiculous when you have nothing, you have something on the piece of paper. So I think folks have to realize that, because if you go into it with the wrong set of a starting point, you totally lose these people and you probably then lost them for good because you've lost your credibility. That's number one. You know, two is, which I think is, you know, proven to be the case, is when you have access to the money or folks are willing to give you money even more than what you may be willing or initially wanted, you sort of try to take it where you can. Obviously, there's a balance of dilution. Mm-hmm. But especially in these times right now, you take as much money as you can. And then the third is really just about capital efficiency and really thinking out how you could get up and start operating and generating cash. The sooner the better, I think, grow from a point of strength and operations versus a standing point and not doing anything. Mm-hmm. As an example, you know, whether or not it was smart or not, you know, because people did it in different ways in Illinois. You know, Illinois, when the first licenses were granted for cultivation, there was no cap on the amount of square feet, et cetera. But it was a new medical market and folks didn't know. Some folks built pretty big facilities, some bought, you know, built out smaller facilities. No one knew how big the market was. It turned out to be a really shitty market. You know, terrible, was tough on patients and all sorts of things. But those folks just sort of built up small and didn't take on a lot of debt. You know, they pittered along for, you know, three, you know, plus years, finally lucky enough that rec, you know, took hold. And now, based on the backs of good cash flow, as well as new money coming in and being excited, they're now building out the stuff and doing well. If they got $20, $30, $40 million in debt, they've been having trouble. They weren't able to expand either within the state or in other markets. I've seen that in other areas as well. Like, you know, here you guys are in Michigan. You know, I've been pitched. I love Michigan. It's nearby. I spend a lot of time in the summer there, et cetera. But, I continue to be pitched by this one group as an example, which just talks about, you know, immediately it's going to be, you know, $25 million the first year, and then to $70 million, et cetera. It just gets really difficult.
Sure.
You know, so that's, you know, really, I think you just have to, you know, sort of baby steps. You can have the big picture and vision, but I think folks need to be able to show the ways that you'll get to that end goal and have an ability to do that.
Very cool. Well, thank you, Michael. I really appreciate that. And, you know, I know you guys have been around, you know, your experience, your wisdom in terms of having gone through these seed rounds and these smaller companies that have grown and become, you know, some of the largest companies in the space. There's a lot of wisdom there to offer. So I appreciate you coming on today, man. We'll be looking for you October 15th at our next event, man. Can't wait to see you there. Maybe we'll get you on a panel or something this time, huh?
A virtual panel, right?
Yeah, come on, a virtual panel. We're not messing around. None of us want COVID.
I'll get a better background for that one. All right.
You absolutely have to. I expect strobe lights or something, okay? All right, Michael. Thanks a lot, man. We appreciate it.
For joining us. Wish we had more time, man.
I know. I would make
2 hours. Every time we you know, finish the and move on to the next guest, I feel like we need to double the time. I wanted to ask, is there such a thing as, you know, being overcapitalized? You know, talk about maturation, about how much it takes, you know, things take time. And yes, we were talking about
one, you have to believe, right? There's gotta be, especially on the investor part, there's gotta be a lot of belief in these companies in order to put money, especially right now during this crunch, right? So, yeah. And maybe our next guest will have something to say.
Yeah, talking about maturation, talking about adoption, about things that take time. Our next guest is my very good friend, Sumit Mehta from Mazakali. He's been in cannabis investment banking for quite a while as well. And he'll tell us all about him. Sumit, are you there?
as he's getting moved over. I'll say the last time I spoke to Sumit, he was in his backyard. Sumit, are you in your backyard today?
Yeah.
I'm in my home office, Patrick.
I love it. He's got the best home office, you guys. It makes me so jealous every time I see it.
It's good to see you. And Javier, always good to see you.
Mine is pretty sweet too, usually. Just today we have neighbors. I have one neighbor and they decided to drill the wall.
Like, awesome. Fun. That is very helpful. Well, if you go on mute for a prolonged period of time, we'll know what's going on. Sumit, welcome, my friend. Welcome. It's so good to see you. It looks sunny there today. So the fog hasn't rolled in yet, has it?
It's a beautiful sunny day, Patrick. It's like after living in Chicago and going to school in Michigan and being out here is just the best day every single day.
Just so rub it in, man. Rub it in. Some of us are still up here in Michigan. It's beautiful now, but I can sense it getting darker quicker. I can sense it. Yeah. It's coming.
I've been telling Javi to move out here, so maybe you'll follow. We'll see.
Perhaps.
Still holding out hope, Patrick.
Do you have any
hikes planned for this long weekend? I know you're an outdoorsy guy.
Yeah. A couple of hikes. I'm going to take my motorcycle out and just enjoy the great outdoors. Yeah.
Okay. So you're a motorcyclist. I have to ask you, do you have like the full leather gear? How are we doing? Were you in Sturgis at the giant motorcycle rally?
That's my jam, Patrick. Yeah.
I knew
Sturgis,
it.
Sturgis, chaps.
I knew it, man.
Yeah.
I could sense it. So when we get you on a panel on October 15th, you'll have to wear that outfit for us, okay?
I will, yeah. I'm getting rid of my bike. I bought this World War II sidecar from the Czech Republic, and that's what I've been driving around.
That's awesome.
I'm very jealous. On the last few days, but I'm getting rid of it. But yeah, that's what I plan to take out this weekend.
Very cool, man. Well, listen, welcome. We're excited to have you here. I mean, let's dive right in. What have you seen during this pandemic? You guys are well entrenched in this space. You've been advising companies. You've been looking at deals and helping these deals come to fruition. Maybe give us a little flavor of what Mazakali's focused on at the moment. And then tell us, during this pandemic, what have you seen?
Yeah, sure. As you guys know, I've been looking at the space since 2013. I put my first capital to work in 2014. Mm-hmm. So I've seen a few cycles, and I can also share that on a relative basis, I haven't seen a set of circumstances that are this enticing from an investment standpoint. So I started my career in the mid-90s at Merrill Lynch. I was a technology analyst. And back then, technology was an industry. And if you look around now, and you guys know this as well as anyone, technology is a part of every industry. And I view cannabis through the same lens. I believe that cannabis will be the best performing asset class over the next decade. And also that no sector will be untouched by this plant. So I do expect it to follow a similar trajectory to technology from that vantage point. And then the second part of your question, you asked what's changed due to COVID, Patrick. And Javi, you mentioned it earlier on this happy hour call that the shutdown has caused a significant increase in anxiety. And I think we can all agree that we know, and we might be, many of the people that are finding difficulty even sleeping well at night. So when you have this level of heightened concern for jobs, for income, for the future, and in an environment where it's like you don't hear the word opioid unless you also hear the word crisis, cannabis is a phenomenal way to deal with that stress and the sleep issues. And what are the side effects? Great movies, music, and good food. So if you also look at how it's been deemed essential in most states, that has served as a phenomenally positive tailwind for the industry. Mm. And I'm curious, you asked what Mazakali is doing. We're watching for any statistically valid data on health outcomes in states that have legal cannabis markets relative to ones that don't, and comparing that data to what we're seeing out of the CDC. Because I think that picture will be quite telling in the months to come and adds yet another angle to the multifaceted set of reasons why this plant, the government just needs to move. And it's nice to hear Mark getting excited about what might happen. And I hope he's right. But we have also seen government tax coffers dwindle. And cannabis is, as you guys know, the most politically popular industry that employment generates revenue, it offers health benefits. And so in an otherwise challenging business environment, I think cannabis is shining through in a way that we simply haven't seen before.
Would you call it recession-proof? Would you call it counter-cyclical? What's the situation there? I've been asking myself this question for a while. Like, what's been going on with the spike, right? What's the correlation with the markets, with the economy? Is there any?
Mm-hmm. I would not call it either one of those. I don't think it's counter-cyclical because I don't think it has the kind of cyclicality that's tied to economic cycles, nor would I call it recession.
Like reinsurance.
What's that?
It's like reinsurance. I always like that parallel because it's the most interesting and the most boring industry. And they have this great thing in common. They're completely uncorrelated to the market.
That's a fair statement. I would call it recession resistant, essential, and uncorrelated as an asset class.
I like that. A touch of realism too. And I think that's important. So I'll segue the conversation, Sumit, into, you know, I'm always interested, and especially now, right, given the crunch in the markets and everything that we've seen, you probably just heard us talking with Michael about it, you know, looking at this through the lens of the everyday investor, not the large funds, right? The folks that are accredited, the folks with money in their portfolio to spend, how should they be looking at this industry right now? Through what lens should they be looking at this industry? Are there particular sectors that should be overly enticing? You know, perhaps a better way to ask that question, Sumit, is the stigma gone for these investors? Do we still need to educate them as a part of getting them more involved in these markets?
Yes, to all three of those last questions. What do we tell investors? Listen, the legal cannabis industry is large and it is growing quite rapidly. And more people are consuming more cannabis for more reasons in more places every day. And if you think about the history of this industry, we're now in our 25th year of legalization in the United States. If you think about when Proposition 215 was first passed in California. And then if you look at the last couple of years in particular, you've seen a very large inflection point in the pace of change in legalization across various states.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt that what started as a trickle a quarter century ago has picked up steam quite rapidly and continues to gain a foothold across the country. And now, if you also think of ultimately legalization from a federal level coming through, then global trade is not a question of if, it's a question of when. And then you look at the 40,000 private companies in our industry, many of whom are doing wonderfully well with valuations that have come down to levels that are far more attractive than they've ever been, with cannabis being deemed essential to further reduce the investment risk, and with markets opening up in exciting geographies with extremely large populations becoming available from a cannabis lens and a cannabis investment lens. I think investors will come and continue to come to this space with a lot of excitement, which is great to see. And what we tell investors is have a plan in place for how much money you want to allocate, what sectors you find attractive, and what geographic markets you want exposure to. Because the industry has matured enough at this stage to warrant and reward, and I think Michael Gruber said this just prior to me, diversification. So if you have planned diversification of exposure with a systematic application of the amount of capital and the cadence of that capital that you want to expose, this industry provides ample growth at very attractive price points. And ultimately, if investing at depressed valuations in an essential recession-resistant asset class with low correlations and many sectors growing north of 30% is attractive, we have all those things in place. So if you're new to the space,
yeah,
I would also recommend getting a professional advisor and making sure that they're licensed to do what they're doing. And finally, remember to have some fun along the way.
Yeah, no, it's, I love that, you know, most people talk about diversifying portfolios, but they talk about sectors, and you're one of the more international guys. And now it's finally really playing out. You know, you and I have had this conversation many times, but now we're finally seeing actual Colombian exports. Now we're seeing actual tons of cannabis being exported from Uruguay, you know, commerce among European countries, you know. So what are some of the most interesting, you know, geographical markets that you're seeing?
I think it's useful to look at what it costs to make cannabis and to then compare it to what this madness that we've seen in the last few years in Canada has been based on, and to think about how Canada in the history of the world has never been known as an agricultural mecca for anything, with the possible exception of maple trees. But then when you think about what it costs to produce a pound of cannabis and you look at the biggest inputs to that cost, they are labor and their power. So harnessing the power of the sun indoors is why the cannabis industry consumes over 1% of all US electricity, and why we have this notion that we have to grow something indoors. Maybe it's related to how we had to hide this from the government, so we had ran inside to grow it. So when you combine that now with the second input cost, which is labor, and you think about where the sun has its maximum power, and that is free, it's equatorial bands around the world. So if you now start thinking about what geographies are likely to be the lowest cost producers of cannabis, now you can see where Colombia, Ecuador, even Thailand, Malaysia, India, and parts of China all play a very important role. Mm-hmm. And we also look at some of the cultural, historical relationship that these countries and areas have had with cannabis. And China, as an example, has never banned hemp. It has been used for thousands of years, and millions of hemp-derived products are sold across stores across the country. India has had a multi-thousand-year relationship with cannabis, and it was only banned in 1985 under pressure from the US government. So when you go back into the roots of this plant, the excitement around something grown in a warehouse in Canada just is myopic from at least the vantage point that that we have at the moment.
Yeah, no kidding. So you're saying Ronald Reagan didn't like cannabis, is what you're saying. Yeah, that's what I thought. So
Patrick, if you can make it happen, I'd love to have a sit down with Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, listen, one of these days, someone will innovate a way to do that. Exactly. I'll personally pass on that though. So when it comes to Sumit, the digital capital platform, I want to give us just a couple minutes to touch on this. It's super interesting. I want the audience to hear about it. I know we might be getting involved with you on there. So I'd love to hear more about
it. Awesome, man. I've used it. It's crazy.
Yeah. Thanks, Patrick. I'll start with a couple of things that are on most people's minds as they think about cannabis and think about investing in cannabis. And that is knowledge, because amongst other things, we have relative opacity of information because of the high fragmentation of this industry. And as a newcomer to the industry, it's hard to learn about where to go and who to speak to and who knows what they're talking about and who is who they say they are. And the second is access. Now, even if I knew certain things, what do I do? When fewer than 1% of the industry is trading on an exchange, you've got 99% of the opportunity in the private markets. And those are the two legs we effectively sought out to address with our capital platform. You guys have been very kind to publish a lot of our research over the years. And we've published now close to 70 green papers since 2016. And that's entirely in our way to help address the knowledge issue and allow for people to get more knowledge simply so that they can make more knowledgeable decisions. And the second part of that is access, and that's where the platform comes in. And effectively, it is a piece of technology that allows for folks to place capital into cannabis and for issuers to raise capital from those investors, all in one seamless function where, as an investor, and I've been investing in the space for 7 years, I'm constantly emailed PowerPoints and then sent to a Dropbox and then maybe sent to DocuSign, and being tossed around from one place to the next is cumbersome, it's inefficient, and it's not fun for anyone. So the platform is simply a good experience and helps us have all of this happen with the help of technology. And what's behind the platform is our broker dealer, where we do all the heavy lifting, where all of the diligence comes in along with our compliance partners to make sure that any company that is on the platform has been fully vetted and looked at by licensed professionals and is then offered in a way that is compliant with all federal guidelines. So we work with the SEC, FINRA, and FinCEN to make that happen. And you did mention you guys are helping support that, and very much appreciate the fact that this industry is so wonderful that we can collaborate to a much greater outcome than any of us would have it going alone.
I'm really glad you said that. That's definitely our MO. Javi has been in this space far longer than I have, but I've definitely seen the good and the bad of, you know, the good of doing that in this industry and the bad of those who choose not to, right? So I think for the most part, this industry is phenomenal about playing in the same sandbox and getting down and working together for the greater good. So I'm getting the hook from our producer, Aaron. So Aaron, you are an absolute slave driver. You're the worst. And I love you at the same time. But Sim, you are the best. We've had such a good time with you. I cannot wait to see you again soon. And ideally we'll get you involved in October up moderating a panel or something. But yeah, my friend, thanks for being here. Javi, any words of wisdom to send Sumit out on?
I mean, honestly, I like the collaboration thing. You know, it's all about building up each other, and the famous, you know, rising tides lifting all boats. You know, say it's corny, say whatever. I built a personal career, and we built a very successful business, largely on this attitude and this philosophy. On this idea of collaborating and supporting each other and trusting each other, right? Of course, there's limitations. You got to be smart about who you trust, but trusting each other is key, right? And many of the people who come on the Cannabis Hour have over the years opened their doors, you know, and shown us, you know, their technologies and shared their data, and that is unusual and worth highlighting.
Well, Javi, I'm surprised you didn't rap that. Maybe next time we'll get one of your compilations. But I think that's something the plant teaches us, and it's an important lesson to not only take away but also to share.
Usually we share. I mean, please don't share joints until we get a vaccine, but you can share the ritual.
You know, just to be clear, share the ritual, share the rap, do what you got to do.
Well, guys, thanks for a great virtual happy hour, and I'm glad you guys are putting these events on. You've got you had some great folks on the show, and appreciate being here.
It's our pleasure, Sumit, man. We'll see you soon. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks, guys.
See ya. All right, take care. And so for those of you with us, we really appreciate you joining. Javier, you are the man. It's always a pleasure to host these with you. It is my duty to ask our audience to like and subscribe to this YouTube page so that you can be notified of the next version of this, and obviously have access to all the previous presentations that we've done here, and tune in next week. So he's pointing. You do it.
I'm showing, you know, just subscribe. There's the button right there.
I love it. I love it when they do that. It's like when they do it on TikTok too, and they go poof, and then something's there. So maybe Aaron can edit something in to poof
or poof. Tune in next week. We're talking ETFs. We got the major U.S. traded ETFs, and the debate will get hot, you know, because they have very different strategies and they're not afraid to point out what's wrong with each other's strategies.
I love that too. I love it. And I love that one of them is brand spanking new, the MSOs ETF, which is really, really cool. So.
And we got Dan Ahrens from Advisor Shares as one of the guests. Exactly. So that should be hot.
Yes, indeed. All right, my friends. Thank you, Javi. Thank you. Pleasure as always, brother.
Thank you for joining, everyone.
All right. Take care.
Introducing Under Armour's Infinity High Sports Bra. Its ergonomic design is molded to support the natural movement of your body. With cord-out padding, the better breathability eliminates extra bulk without sacrificing support. And quick-dry padding is Under Armour's fastest-drying padding yet. When you're lifting heavy, running fast, and pushing yourself further than ever before, you need a bra that will help you go that extra mile and make you feel your best. Shop the Infinity High Sports Bra now at UA.com.
Jeep Freedom Days are here, where right now, well-qualified returning FCA lessees get a low-mileage lease on the 2022 Grand Cherokee WK Laredo E4x4 for $369 a month for 36 months with $3,799 due at signing. Tax, title, license extra. No security deposit required. Call 1-888-925-JEEP for details. Requires dealer contribution, a lease through Chrysler Capital. Lessee is responsible for termination fees. Current lease must end by 7-3-23. Extra charge for miles over 30,000. Residency restrictions apply. Take delivery by 7-5-22. Jeep is a registered trademark.